You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And welcome back to Community Connections, and we're talking, being the second Wednesday in the month, is our Legal Hour with Hutchison Legal, and I have both Josh and Jordan with me. Welcome, guys.
Thank you for having us. It's a pleasure to be here.
No worries. Great to have you lot as well. Now, we had a question last time, because the mobile phones, we know, we're not allowed to pick up, and when you they've got to be securely. You can't talk on them unless you've got hands free. You can't pick them up and look at them. But there's a bit of a problem, or this person asked the question, how do you go with these watches? Now, my watch is a Fitbit, and it does all sorts of things, but it also gets the text and the emails. So, I mean, if you pull up at a set of lights and I decide I want to know the time and I tap it, how can I guarantee that the police don't think you're trying to read a text or trying to read an email?
Yeah, good question. And I think it's definitely, as our watches used to just be, you know, tell the time and you'd be fine, right? But now they can do everything. Now you can watch movies on them. Now you can read text, like you were saying. I think that it's important just to first clarify what you can and can't do with a smartwatch, and then we can go to your specific example in a second. So if you're a full licensed driver, L plates, P plates, don't even bother. Please just don't get one. But if you are a fully licensed driver, you are not allowed to touch your watch in any way, okay? The only thing that you're allowed to do with it is by voice command, you can take audio calls or tell your watch to start playing a song, or adjust the volume of both of those two things, right? It's very much so hands-free, because remember, with using your phones, right, the rule is that it has to be mounted on your front screen. The idea with that, I think, is so that you, when you're looking at that mounted phone, your eyes are still, you can see
it's
in your peripheral vision.
In front.
Right? But I think that what people don't understand or don't realize is that when you're looking down at your watch, you're looking down like a massive amount. You can't see the road anymore.
But even if you stopped at the intersection, because that's I mean, you'd have to be a fool to be driving down the road and tapping your watch. But, I mean, the rules are you still can't read it while you're at a set of lights, can you?
So it's definitely tempting. In like, just from my personal experience, there's an intersection right at the top of my street where I live. And every time I get there, it's always red. I always have to sit for 3 minutes. And I always think, man, this is just so boring. Like, it's tempting every single day. But, no, the rule is that even if you're stopped at a traffic light, you're still driving, okay? Yep. And the same rules apply. Even if you're stopped, even if it's a red light for a billion years, you cannot look at your watch when if you want to, like, read a text. No, unfortunately not. You just have to sit there and enjoy the scenery.
But you can't even read the time then, can you?
Well, think about this. If you own a smartwatch, the realistic point of view is that you have a clock in your car, and that's usually in front of you anyways. And so, no, you can't look at it even for the time. And if you are trying to get the time, have a look at the dash cam, have a look at where your clock is based in your car, because I'd likely say if you have a smartwatch on, you've got a car that has a clock somewhere on it. But in terms of the law, yes, just don't worry about looking at your watch whatsoever. Focus on the road, and it's
In the old days, you couldn't you? If you'd been able to just look down and said, oh, yeah, that's the time.
Correct.
Whatever it might be, but but I guess the interpretation is going to be if the police, and I'm not here to have a go at the police, we had a question asked, the interpretation is the policeman might say, well, no, you didn't look at the time, you looked at a text or you looked at an email.
Correct, and it is very subjective, and now what we've got is we've got technology and cameras and aerial views of how what you're actually doing, and so with things like the new cameras that are being built, even in Croydon or Maroon Highway, these places, they're having to be able to take the photo, see what you're doing, even if it's you're on your phone, if you're on the watch, and they can actually see what's on the screen at the same time, and that way there's no question.
It's that intrusive into the car.
Correct.
You can see everything.
Correct, yes. And so it's getting harder and harder with, you know, technology building up, getting clearer pictures of what's going on. It's harder to argue, I wasn't holding my phone, I wasn't looking at my watch, when you've got a clear photograph saying, yes, that's a very irrefutable photo of you having a look at your watch. Even if it's for the time, your eyes need to be on the road, because even if it's for yourself, you have to protect the others around you as well.
And I guess the other thing is, even if you stop, you don't want to wind up in this situation where it's you're in court and it's he said, she said, like the police are saying, oh, no, no, you're actually reading a text, and you're saying, no, I was only reading the time.
Indeed, indeed. And that's where it comes down to evidence and showing clearly that what you were doing during that time, which is hard. If you're just a policeman rocking up and saying, I saw you do it, that's where it just becomes a he said, she said argument. And not likely to happen, but usually the police have some sort of basis, whether it be a chest camera that they've got or a dash cam on their vehicle, that have spotted that happening. So,
all right, we'll take a quick break and we'll be back with more. Strange as it may seem, this life is just a dream, a world of illusions to hide in, my friend.
Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
If you do have any questions you want answered, you'd need to give us a ring pretty quick on 59-615-991. 59-615-991. We'll either get the boys to answer it this afternoon, or if not, we'll get them to come back with an answer for next week. But, all right, Christmas is coming up. There's always a bit of things about what you're entitled to with refunds, because you give a present and somebody's already got it. And so what's the actual law? Not what some, because I know some stores will just take it back unquestioned. Others have rules. But what's the actual law say about refunds?
Yeah, so I think the burning question on everyone's mind is, like, if my kid or whoever I bought a gift for hates my gift, can I get a full return on it? And I think the unfortunate answer, as far as the law's concerned, is no. A change of mind isn't enough for just a full refund, no questions asked. I think a lot of stores, like you were saying, do offer, like, they have pretty generous return policies, but that's not going to be the case, and they're not obliged to do that.
So you don't want to bank on it, do you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Hopefully you know the person you're getting a gift quite well.
Yep.
But in terms of what the law actually says, so I think it's important to, it's pretty common for if you buy something, if you get a warranty for it, especially if it's something expensive. What we're talking about here, we're going to be talking about essentially what are guarantees that the Australian consumer law says that, like, this is the minimum, these are your protections, and then any warranties that companies offer will be building on top of that. But these are the bare necessities. So when people buy presents, when people buy just general goods, they can expect a few things. They can expect that the goods are going to be of acceptable quality, that they're going to be fit for any disclosed purpose, and some other things, like they're going to correspond with the description. So, like, you want to, you don't want to buy a TV, you don't want to open it up and then realize that it's all scratched, the colors show up wrongly, or just it doesn't turn on at all. Maybe you bought a toaster by accident that just looks like a TV, right? And these are all guarantees that, like, when you buy that TV, like, that is what you will get. If, however, like, let's say something's gone wrong and then the TV isn't working properly, then there are a few different things that can happen. The first thing is you need to first figure out whether or not what's happened to your TV is what's called a major failure or a non-major failure. A major failure would basically be, like, every time you turn on the TV, it's just unsafe to use, essentially, or something is so wrong that if you had known about that, you'd never have bought it in the first place. So it has to be something, like, really, really big that's wrong with it. If that problem can be remedied, you can make the supplier, so you'd go to the people who sold you the TV, right? You wouldn't have to go to the person who made the TV, because they're probably like, if they're, especially if they're an overseas manufacturer, it'd be impossible to get over to China. That'd be impossible, and the Australian consumer law, it says you don't have to do that, because that's impossible to do. You can go to the local person who sold you the TV, and you can tell them that they have to fix it within a reasonable time, right?
If that's, do you have any right, if it, well, because if it won't turn on, well, they're going to obviously do something, but can you, do you have a right, if it's still brand new and it hasn't been used, it's not, to get another one, or do you have to give them the opportunity to repair what you've got?
Are you saying in a situation where that TV isn't broken?
Yeah, well, is something wrong with it? Like,
oh, there is something wrong.
It won't
wrong.
Turn on.
Yeah, exactly.
Do they, is their obligation just to fix that one, or is your obligation to give you a new one?
So say it just doesn't turn on, and then say that, like, the first step would be figuring out whether they can fix it, right? So you can make them try to fix it within a reasonable time. And say, for instance, they can't fix it, or they can't fix it within a reasonable time. In that case, you can demand for a full refund. But say, let's say it's something a little less serious. Say it's only just got a couple of, like, dings and scratches, but it still turns on, everything still works fine. In that case, it's probably not a major failure. And in that case, for goods, the supplier themselves, they'd have the option of whether they want to provide you a refund, a replacement, or repair. So for things not that serious, the supplier has that choice. The supplier. And that's when it becomes quite different store to store, like we were talking about earlier. Some stores are pretty generous. They'll just give you a refund, no questions asked. Others might exercise that right and say, no, we don't want you, we don't want to give you a full replacement instead, or a refund. We'll just try and repair it first and then go from there.
Yeah, so it's at their discretion. Whoever sells it to you is at their discretion to decide what happens. But it's always worth just talking to that store first, making sure you know the policy before you buy something. Because if we're talking something expensive, usually the store people will be able to say, yes, this is the warranty, this is what happens if you do this, that, whatever, and this is what happens. So always good to just have a chat with a staff member and get that advice before you purchase anything in that sense.
All right. Now, having said that, what about I get online and I see this particular, well, we'll say it's a shirt, just for instance. I see this nice shirt and everything looks good and the size I get, so I pay for it because that's the only way you can order it. You pay for it, comes out, and it looks nothing like it was advertised. How do I go? Because how am I going to get money out of China, Indonesia, or anywhere the likes of that? What guarantees, if any, when you buy online are there?
And the short answer with online, it's simply at the online, we'll call them a website, it is at their policy's discretion at that point. And so what you don't want to do is risk, at the moment there is no forcing of another country to pay you for something you saw online on their local website,
right.
Because they're sort of in their own special category. So it is purely at the discretion of the site's policy that's written on their website. And say big companies like Amazon and eBay and all these sort of major companies,
yep.
they have a very clear process yep. of how to do things, what your rights are, what they will guarantee your return is. Maybe you don't get a full refund. Maybe there's an 80% refund return policy for them.
Yep.
And it's purely at their discretion. And that is the risk with online shopping, is you don't get those Australian guarantees.
All right. So you're talking... the big ones, I don't have a problem with those, because most of those people, they're reputable businesses, their name is important to them, but you buy from Joe Bloggs in, I don't want to use a country, but in some way off country, and they promise you that this is what it's going to look like. You see the photo and you think, oh, that's terrific, and it gets here. I saw one on a wedding dress where it was nothing like what they'd ordered. So what happens then? You really haven't got much rights, have you?
No, indeed not. And even if you did manage to find some legal right, the legal costs to get your refund and find a lawyer that will take on your case and sue Joe Bloggs from so-and-so and locate them and do all these procedures, that would just cost you more to pay in fees than you will actually pay for the item itself. And that's the risk you take with buying from Joe Bloggs of this website that you've just...
So you really need to be very, very careful, don't you, when you start buying online?
Because indeed.
Because you're only relying on a picture, which may not be a picture of what they're actually trying to sell you anyway, or what's going to turn up.
Correct, and that's always the risk with online shopping. So usually we'd say make sure that you buy from a reputable source. Even better, buy in person, go down to your local shops,
yep.
help support the locals, and then that way you know what you're getting. You know that they're from a reputable source, and that way you can give your presence without worrying that it's not what it is.
And if there is a problem, you've got someone to go back to talk to rather than trying to talk to someone who will ignore your emails overseas.
Exactly. And most of those, we'll call them not-so-legitimate websites, won't even respond or have an email or have any help support that will be there
yep.
to guide you if something goes wrong. Hence, it's at your own risk to do that way.
Because I can't remember how much now, but we're spending billions of dollars overseas,
yes.
aren't we,
yes.
on the internet?
Yes, and that's because production overseas is a lot cheaper than production
yep.
in Australia, unfortunately, just how their legislation works on labour costs and material costs and so forth. So it makes sense to manufacture things overseas, but unfortunately that's the risk of not buying, I guess, it locally.
I'm going to throw it to you, and this
yeah.
is probably a bit hard. So even if you did buy something overseas, you can prove it's not what it was. What our law, our courts... can't impose penalties overseas, can they? So you'd have to rely on somebody overseas taking up your case as well, wouldn't you?
Usually there's treaties between certain countries, so it sort of depends between which country to which
right.
country. Say, we'll use the Commonwealth, so England perhaps, there's some sort of treaty there. Then you might be able to do something if it's an easy enough locatable company
yep.
that has a brick and mortar somewhere that you can easily locate and sort of negotiate with them. But usually with online websites, they don't list an address, they don't list
right.
where they are, they don't have any contact details
whatsoever.
They can
work out their garage.
Correct. And that's why you wouldn't be able to find them, you won't be able to contact them. Trying to start a case against them will be very, very difficult, and it's not worth it.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and be back with more. When you were young and your heart was young. This ever-changing world in which we live in makes you give in and cry. Say, live and let die. Live and let die. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
I'm talking to Josh and Jordan from Hutchison Legal. Now, Jordan, you want to talk about some signs going up?
Yeah, so as we head into the Christmas period, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of promotional material, all the signs saying, buy this for this percent off, buy one, get one free. All these sort of signs will go up to try and entice the consumers to buy some presents. Yep. They might put all these big banners showing what the dollar amount is, what you're saving and so forth. And so one of the common issues that you see is people misreading the price. And so they might say, save $100 and it costs so-and-so dollars, but they only see save the 100 and then think it's actually $100. Go to the register, they scan it, it's $2,000, but you saved $100. Congratulations. And so one of the common things is to understand that under the current consumer law, stores are not able to mislead people. And so it's called misleading deceptive conduct.
Right.
And so the idea is that if you have some sort of signage or some way of advertising, that has to be clear. It has to show what the terms and conditions are, if there are any associated with this.
Yep.
So, for example, if you buy two, you get one free, you have to clearly state it. You can't just put get one free.
Yep.
And so you have to specifically state what the terms are of a specific deal are. And so what you would see is you'd go into a shop, they'd have a sign saying, this gets you $50 off, pay $70 in smaller print.
Yep.
Unfortunately, as long as they do keep the terms clear enough, and when I say clear enough, it's obviously quite a subjective thing.
Yep.
Everyone's eyesight will be different to each other.
Yep.
And so they look at what a reasonable average person might be able to read. If it's clearly stated there in a slightly smaller font that it's a bit cheaper and this is the actual price, that's how it is, unfortunately. However, if they say, save $100, and then the print is so small that you can't even, the average person couldn't squint to read it,
yep,
then you'd be able to say, give me that price that you've advertised as per the sign that you put there.
So if I walk in and it says less 20%, and the price on the shelf is, say, whatever it is, but it could it be 20% off the original price? And what I'm saying is, they might have it on at a special, like the special, the full price might be $10. We'll say they've got it on, not special, but they're selling it $8, and we're going to give you X off. You've got to be careful that they're actually not just giving it off the high figure, and so it might only still be the same price, won't it?
Correct, and that is allowed at the moment, as long as it's quite clear. You've put the numbers, $10, it was from $10, you've saved 20%, now it's $8, something along those lines. Even now, I've seen at shops, they have, it's 50% off, take an extra 10% off that. It's not 50, it's not a total of 60%, it's 50% off the price, and then it's a 10% off that 50% price. And so that way, the math doesn't work out to be 60%, it's slightly less, but at the moment that is a sign that they can clearly see all the different elements of the prices and how it got to that price, and that's totally fine at the moment.
So that's
what a lot of stores are taking control of at the moment, is putting a sign saying it was 30% off, take an extra 10% because it's a Christmas sale or what have you. And that is under the current legislation allowed, until someone finds a little, if they find something that says save 10% off in the tiniest font, or it's missing completely, that's when you'd be able to make a claim to the store manager and say, hi, this is what you've advertised, there's nothing else on the sign, give it to me at that price.
There are a few traps along the way, aren't there?
Indeed. And that's where be careful when you're shopping. Don't just assume the big number is the price you're going to pay. That's the most common thing.
And, of course, the big thing at the moment is we're coming into Christmas and there's going to be, you know, $2 or $3 billion spent in the next few weeks.
100%. And that's where consumers will take advantage of all the sales they see and they think it's much cheaper. And that's where you've got to be careful. Read the signage. Talk to a person who works there and get the get clarity around what you're actually going to pay.
All right, I've got another question I want to ask, but I've got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
It's been a while. I know I shouldn't have kept you waiting. But I'm here now.
This part. Oh.
Listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
All right. Now, earlier we were talking about purchasing online, and we've talked about the big people like your Amazons and all that, and most of those are, well, they are, they're reputable businesses who cherish their names, and we've talked about some of the smaller ones from overseas. What about, and I don't want to actually use the names, but there are a lot of different marketplaces on the computer, and there's Facebook, and there's a Gumtree, and there's a whole lot. So we're not talking in particular about any one of them. In general, what sort of guarantees to have against with those if you buy something off them?
Yeah, so unfortunately, from those guarantees that we were talking about earlier, none of them would apply if you're just trying to buy, like, say you're trying to buy a barbecue from Joe Smith, just up the road. Unfortunately, all those guarantees about acceptable quality, fit for purpose, none of them would apply. So what ends up happening is you've got to be really, really careful when it comes to just purchasing from individual sellers. The main thing, which I think would be the smart thing to do if you're trying to buy, like, a barbecue in this case, let's just use that as an example, is when you go and buy it, make sure that you inspect it yourself, right? So make sure that before you hand over any money, you take a look at it, make sure that you that it is as it's advertised. You don't want to get into a situation where you've got this picture of something that's shiny, it looks like it'll sear a steak in, you know, 3 seconds flat, and you get there and it's all rusted over.
It's an old one.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to be, you know, or it'll just spontaneously catch on fire.
Yep.
So yeah, it's just really important that you inspect the goods before you pay any money for them. And I think you were talking earlier during the break about how you don't want to, you want to be careful, especially when you're buying at someone else's place. You want to, because it's scary stuff having a stranger, you know, rock up at your house. And then you were speaking about alternatives for that.
Yep. Well, I was going to mention that in a minute, that I had a friend, he actually ran a garage sale, but same sort of deal. He sold stuff from home. A couple of weeks later, someone came and broke in because they came to his place, sold the stuff. And there's been a couple of cases of where young people have tried to sell their mobile phone and they think, well, I don't want them coming to my place. So they meet them in a park and someone turns up and steals the phone and gone. But I had the police in here only a few weeks ago and we were talking about it. And I think it's Moorabbin. And it could be Hillsville. There are a number of police stations around that will let you go and take your goods there, whatever it might be. Like, you wouldn't want to turn her up with a truckload of furniture or something. But if you've got smaller items or a car, because there've been a few, particularly classic cars, stolen by people who turn up and rob the car at a park. And so some of the police stations will allow you to go down, take your item down there, and actually let the people view them, do the trade, and so that you're not out in some unexposed park. And I think that's a terrific idea.
Indeed, indeed. The biggest thing to do with these deals is make sure you're safe when dealing secondhand goods as well. Usually we're not dealing with a store with secondhand goods. It's usually someone that's decided they don't need something anymore, they want to get rid of it, and you've decided to buy it. as I said before, the consumer rights aren't really applicable in those sort of situations, and so it's really a matter of being safe. Like you said, go to the police station, do the trade, make sure that you're happy with it first. Obviously, once that transaction happens, it's going to be a lot harder to get your refund if you're unhappy later. So even for a phone, make sure it turns on, make sure it functions the way you think it does, make sure that it's got all the parts for a SIM card holder and so forth, and then make sure you're happy with it before giving all the money away, and that way you know you're satisfied, they know that they've got their money and that you're satisfied, and there'll be no issues after that.
All right, look, we'll take the last break, and then we've got a question for you to go away and have a look at, because I'm sure, Grant, if you're listening, you won't be surprised when you hear what we're going to talk about. But anyway, we'll come back and we'll give that to you guys, and we'll hopefully get an answer next month.
Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Now, we have had one of our listeners ring in, and while we've been talking about these sites, and we're talking about where you're buying from another person, and these are local sites that we talked about, we don't want to name them, but these marketplaces, but they did say that we should mention, like, we should balance it, that if people use PayPal and some of those things and a Visa card, they do have some rights there. We sort of probably made it sound as though, you know, if you buy from these people, you've got no recall at all, but a PayPal will often gets your money back, and so will some of the banks. We just should mention that.
Correct. And that goes to the payment method. Obviously, yep. Cash is going to be a bit harder to recoup, but with PayPal and Visa, MasterCard and so forth, they do have their own policies of protection that will give you a partial refund. I don't believe they do a full one, but they will help you recoup some of that money if you do a transaction using their platform, and that's how they make their money as well, as by getting you to use their methods like PayPal to ensure that you get a smooth transaction. Yep. So
thanks for the listener who rang in. We should do that. I mean, we should balance the argument and have both sides. And I think we mentioned very briefly, but we didn't sort of dwell on that, so we should have. All right, so now we've got a question for you to bring back next week. So who's going to write it down?
I've got it down.
Righto, let's get going. Now, it's about bail. Now, I know if you're listening, Grant, you'll be saying, oh, not again. But we're always getting questions on bail. You know, we had a situation I heard of yesterday or the day before where somebody got robbed at knife point, and they got the police charged them, and by the person time the next morning, the person was out on bail, yet for about the sixth time. There was an attempt, and this is what the person's asking, what happened? I know Grant was here probably a few months ago, and at that time the government announced that they were tightening up on the bail. We want to know, has that been enacted, and also what difference is it making? They were talking about certain things. I can't even remember what they were saying, but the person's rung in, wanted to know what have they been enacted, because sometimes it takes Parliament a long while to do this stuff, and B, if it has been enacted, what is what's it altered, and is it going to make it harder for people to get bail?
Yes, well, I can't answer that, and we will look into whether or not they have passed through Parliament, but just touching on the balance of how to get bail, it's quite an interesting balance for the we'll call them policy makers of the government, whereby the whole point, or one of the points of justice, we'll call it, is to reform and rehabilitate and let them get back into the world. Obviously, with repeat offenders, there's quite a question of will they rehabilitate, will they actually get better, will they learn from their mistake? And so balancing up tightness of you can't be released back in the public versus the whole concept of we try to ensure you learn from your mistake and we give you this opportunity to get back into society, that's where the balance is. And unfortunately, with things like bail, it's always going to be everyone's either seen something on the news and they think it's horrible, or they've seen it on the news and they don't agree that they should have been let out on bail. There is so many factors to do with bail that have to do with the individual themselves. It's not just about public perception, but...
Well, a part of it is, I mean, the public perception is that some of these people are on bail for five and six times.
Yes.
And the... I know we've discussed this with Grant before, and we don't want to get into it too deeply, because you're saying, well, it's not working. If you're on bail for the sixth time,
correct.
If by then you're not going to take any notice, well, is it, you know, when do you say stop? I guess in this instance, though, we're more looking at the law itself, because they did announce they were going to change it.
Yes,
now,
they did. Yeah.
We know that parliaments, just because of the size of them and the workload, that it can be a year or so before they actually get passed, and that's if both sides agree. And what this person said, well, firstly, has it been changed? And if so, what's the difference? I mean, it's already really good to announce we're going to change it all. It's going to make it hard to get bail, but sometimes when it gets to you guys, it hasn't altered much at all.
Indeed, indeed. And there is the legal side and the practical side of every law that comes through. So, no, we will definitely look into it and see if there has been any changes to the current reforms and whether or not... if they have made a difference in the, we'll call it statistics of everyday life. But as it stands at the moment, we, you know, there's always two sides to a story.
Yep.
And so, yes, Parliament does take time. For those who haven't looked into how laws are actually made, it is quite a rigorous process to get something from start to finish.
But I'm going to also stand on the other side and say that a lot of people believe that bail's too easy to get.
Yes, that's true, and in some cases that would be an appropriate view to take, and that's where I guess Parliament has to listen to the people and take on those notes and still sort of balance what they consider to be justice.
Parliaments don't always take on the notice of the people, but anyway...
That is true. That is true, unfortunately.
This is not a political show. I never talk politics on this show, and I don't intend to, and I guess it's... It's from your perspective. If you're out here and you're thinking, oh, these persons got bail for 7 and 8 times, never worked the first 2 or 3, so why is it going to work now? But I guess from the... And I'm not either criticised magistrates or judges. I don't want to be in trouble with that. And I guess they then have another... you know, maybe it is all on rehabilitation. And I don't know.
Well,
I don't
want to get... Well, they have a
good lawyer. Let's get back to... all we want to know is the law. We don't want to be pontificating about you know, whether they're getting it too easy or not. They did say that they were going to tighten up on bail, which means that they're obviously going to make it harder. And I guess that what this person wants to know is, did they do it? And if so, what's the difference? I mean, if you've altered it to make it harder, there must be some standout things that do it.
Yeah, usually it's a change of wording in the legislation into... in some possible way, a higher standard of test, we'll call it, to ensure that
together.
You get bail.
So we'll leave it up to the judges that to sort it out, but we'd just like to know. And on this show, all we do is talk about law. It's not my job or anybody else's job to sit back here and say, oh, well, this should happen or that should happen. We only want to talk about what the law says. And everybody has their view on politics, and I'm not here to talk politics at all. Anyway, look, thanks, guys. Josh, I think you've just about finished your time, and you're due to sometime next year become a fully qualified lawyer.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be really cool.
And you haven't decided yet what side of politics.
Yeah.
What sort? Well, you don't want to be doing that. You haven't decided what if you're going to specialise or just be a general.
Yeah, well, politics isn't for me. I'll tell you that 100%. But in terms of the law, I think I'm still trying to find my footing. See, like, try and get experience in different areas. Yep. See what I like.
Yep. You're thinking more. business side or crime side, criminal?
I'm thinking, well, yeah, I think I'm leaning... I do quite enjoy criminal law, so I'm thinking something more around that. And kind of, I just... The main thing is I want to be working with clients, like, in a personal sense. So the working on transactions doesn't really appeal to me. I see the appeal, but it's just not for me.
In one sentence, what made you decide you want to be a lawyer?
Just
one sentence. We're out of time.
Naively, I just want to help people.
Sounds good. Thanks, Josh and Jordan, and we look forward to having somebody back here in the next one will be December, the last one for the year.
Terrific. Thank you.
Thanks.